All right, welcome everyone. My name is Erin Schaefer. I'm the Grad Assistant at the Women's Center. I'd like to welcome you to our Spring 2012 Women on Wednesday series, Exploring and Making Visible Women's Intersecting Identities. This semester's series on women's intersecting identities will explore the rich layers of women's multiple identities and how these intersections shape their lived experiences and perceptions. A few items before we get started. Please turn off your cell phones and also please stay seated until 12:50 as a courtesy to our speakers. You could also fill out the evaluation forms. We use your feedback for future programming. Also, tomorrow from 6 to 8, there will be an open mic night in honor of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. There's more information in the back if you're interested. Our session today is titled Queer Women of Color. Our panelists will discuss the unique challenges that queer women of color face, as well as the strategies they employ to access and or create the spaces needed for personal and professional growth and activism for social change. Our panelists today are Nitra Cottledge, Veronica Mora, and Sei Yang is on her way, so she'll be a little bit late. Nitra Cottledge, in the purple, is the Assistant Director of the Women's Center at the University of Minnesota. She earned her master's degree from the University of Minnesota in Educational Policy and Administration, with a research focus on women of color in higher education administrative leadership. Veronica Mora is a queer Chicana Mujerista and a fourth-year student at St. Cloud State University, majoring in education. She's currently the co-chair of Chicano Student Movement of Atlan and Queer People of Color, QPOC. Mora co-founded QPOC in the spring of 2011 after feeling and seeing the need for a safe space for LGBTQ people of color. We are very grateful to have them here with us today. Please join the Women's Center in welcoming Anish Cottledge and Veronica Mora. So the first question is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your various identities? How do you define yourself?
It's like stuck to the table. Hi, everyone. My name is Veronica, like she said. I am the co-chair for MECHA, which is the Movimiento Estudiantil Chicanao de Aztlán. The Chicano Student Movement Aztlán, we're an organization here on campus. I'm also the co-chair for QPOC. A little bit about myself. I'm a fourth-year student here at St. Cloud State University. I'm originally from California. I came here to go to school. I know a lot of people are like, why did you come to Minnesota from California? And I'm like, the wonderful weather. But I do identify as a queer Chicana Mujerista, Chicano with an X. And that's like signifying that I acknowledge my indigenous background. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, like Mexican people, Mexican American people, there's like a history behind that, like we have been here in the United States for a really long time before the United States was a country. So before that, there was indigenous people that lived on this in this continent. So I acknowledge that indigenous connection. And Mujerista is basically a feminist, but, you know, also, you know, acknowledging the intersections between being a Chicana, a woman of color here in the United States, and a feminist.
Her answer was a lot more involved than mine. I was talking about this last night with my partner. I would define myself as a black woman, probably also a feminist, who also identifies as a lesbian. Your answer really was so much better than mine. I mean, it just boils down really simply for me. When I think of myself, no, I totally did. But I was thinking, oh, what could I add to this? I primarily do think of myself as a black woman. I also am not a native Minnesotan. I'm from Michigan, born and raised in Detroit. And lesbian, that's just, or I might use the word gay sometimes. I'm not really a big fan of the word queer for me, but for other people, it's fine. Like, whatever works for you, work it out. But for me, that's just not how I frame my identity. So I'll just leave it there.
What is the biggest challenge you face as a queer woman of color?
I was actually thinking about this question quite a bit. I think one of the biggest challenges, in my mind, when I read this question, I thought of two things. One is my family, right? Because growing up, it's like I said, I come from a Mexican family. My parents, my parents came from Mexico, so I'm a first generation U.S. citizen. And for me, like, coming out to my family was, for a really long time, it wasn't an option. But then when I came here to St. Cloud State University, and I was like, I'm gay, I'm proud. And then I go back with, like, short hair and, you know, like, dressing, you know, like a boy. My parents kind of freaked out, and my dad guessed it, and then he told my mom. And it was, like, such a huge thing because, you know, my family is kind of like, you don't embarrass your family, and, you know, by being out and queer, it's kind of like, you know, you are embarrassing your family because it's something that's such a taboo. It's something that's so looked down upon. So, you know, coming out to my family and being open with them and being able to have conversations with them, like, I could never have a conversation with my parents about, you know, a significant other, my partner. You know, like, if I want to have a family and, you know, like, adopt children or have children, whatever it is, however I decide, it's not something that I will include my parents, right? Because they're so grounded in that, like, traditional, a man marries a woman. So that has been a really big struggle for me, you know, like, having that connection with my family and my identity as a queer woman. The second one is finding a compatible partner. It's really hard here in Minnesota to find, you know, like, politically conscious woman of color, especially in central Minnesota. I don't know about the Twin Cities. but yeah, it's been really difficult because, you know, I try to have conversations with, you know, like, I've had you know, girlfriends that are white, and trying to have conversations about, like, racial issues is really difficult because they just didn't understand. It's not that they didn't want to, it's just, it was difficult for them too.
In answer to your question about what it's like in the Twin Cities, that's part of my response too. And it is hard finding a partner in Minnesota. My partner was here in Minnesota before I came, so she always jokes that she had to import me in. So, just saying. But in the Twin Cities, I think, obviously, I think there are more people of color, more GLBTQ people of color. But I do think that one of the challenges in the Twin Cities is finding community nonetheless. I mean, I always feel like the sort of GLBT communities of color are, I don't know where they are sometimes. I'm like, is there an underground meeting? You know, do I have to wear a jacket, say a password? So I think that finding community is always really challenging. One of the other challenges too, as I was looking at this question, was it depends on the context. I think as a queer woman of color, it depends on which of your identities are most salient at any given time. So if I'm in a room full of all white people, then I don't know that I'm feeling my lesbian identity the most at that point. I'm usually feeling as though my African-American identity is more salient. So I think it just depends on where you are. Are you with your family? Are you with your friends? Are you in a mixed race group? Are you among all GLBT people, but they're all white and you're the only GLBT person of color? So I think it just depends a lot on context, and you negotiate that in different ways depending on where you are. So,
yeah, adding on to that, what she was saying, like, I have found myself that I don't really, not associate myself, but before, when I first started coming out, you know, I went through this phase where I was just like I said, you know, like, I'm gay, I'm proud, you know, like, rainbows all the way. But then I just kind of, like, started realizing here, you know, like, I wanted to feel that, you know, like, Mexican part of me, that Latino part of me, I wanted to be able to speak Spanish and, like, dance, right? So then I would go hang out with my friends who are also Mexican. And then it would come to a time where it would go to where it was just like, okay, like, I want to go dance with a girl, but most of the people here are straight, and if, you know, if they're attracted to women too, then I don't know, my gaydar doesn't work very well, you know, like, so it's really difficult trying to, you know, like, be all of my identities mm-hmm. at one time, because there's really not a lot of safe spaces, you know, like, or there's really not a lot of spaces, even within QPOC, right, the queer people of color, even within that, it's still difficult because, you know, we come from different racial backgrounds, and there's not that many other queer Latinas, you know? So I can never really be, like, all of myself in one spot, because I always have to pick and choose, like, okay, like, which one am I going to be right now? You know, I'm going to be queer. I'm going to be Mexican, right? I'm going to be a woman. So it's really difficult, like, always having to be like, okay, this is me right now, and putting on, like, one front.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is cool. I think about this a lot because I think sometimes there's an assumption in GLBT communities that everyone's going to come into a sort of a GLBT space, quote unquote, and feel welcomed, or that it's their community. And I don't always feel that way. So some of the things that Veronica's talking about with, you know, you want to see people who look like you, and really be in touch with your own sort of racial or ethnic culture and background at the same time while being GLBT, I think that's always a balancing act. So context is so important, because you just, you know, what happens when you're like, yes, I'm loving the music, I'm loving being around my people, but I want to dance with a girl. How is that going to go down? Is this going to be a safe space in which to do that? I mean, at this point, I don't know that I really care as much about what people think, but, you know, I do think that there's something to be said about, you know, is this a comfortable or a safe space in which to do this? And I think that's always something to think about. So
have you or do you experience prejudice or discrimination within and outside of the LGBT community? And could you give us a story or example?
Do you want me to go first?
Oh,
okay. I keep making her go first. When I was thinking about this question, I was like, you know, I can't remember any sort of question or some story or example. You know, when you're asked to provide a story or example, you're just like, shoot me in the face. I can't even think of anything now, even though you know things have happened. I was having a conversation about microaggressions, and I was thinking that it's not so much overt prejudice or discrimination that happens, but more of these microaggressions or a sense of unwelcome climate. And so I actually went into a GLBT student organization space just to kind of check out and see what it was. This was, I don't know, maybe when I was a graduate student. And it was really unwelcoming. So, I mean, first of all, when I went into the space, everyone in the space was a white person, which, okay. But no one literally greeted me, said, hey, you know, let me tell you about our services. Let me tell you about what we do. So I was just kind of feeling very invisible. And I think that that's what happens a lot. Sort of within the GLBT community, a sense of, we're just not even going to address that race or any of these other identities are an issue. I mean, so there's an invisibility factor. So I think that tends to happen, or I notice that, or I experience that more than any sort of overt comments or behavior. And I do think that when we usually think of GLBT, or the way that I think of GLBT, is it's pretty coded. I tend to read that as, that means white men, white gay men of a certain class background who get to dictate what that means. And so I don't think that as a woman of color, as a lesbian, that whatever the GLBT's community, the agenda always is taking me in mind. So I think there's just that feeling of I'm not factoring in. So I don't know that it's more about specific behavior or comments or anything.
Yeah, I agree with what she said. A lot of times it's really more just like, you know, the more invisible factor, right, within the LGBTQ community. But there has been times where, like, maybe not necessarily, you know, like, referring to me, but when people are like, making jokes, right, or they make, like, racial comments or something, and it's just kind of like, well, wait a minute, you know, like, why did you say that, you know, it's really different when a person of color talks about it within their own group, right? When you're just like joking around, but you know, if someone outside the group says it, it's just like, wait a minute, like, what makes it okay for you to say it? You know, like, there's nothing that makes it okay for you to say it. But outside of the LGBTQ community, like, it's kind of like the same thing. Mm-hmm. I notice a lot of homophobic like talk. You know, even hanging out with guys, it's like, oh, you're so gay, like, stop being, and I'm sorry for my language, stop being a faggot, or, like, even even using it as a term for, like, woman, or, like, using terms that are meant to demean women and other men, right? Like, I see that a lot within the Latino community. You know, like, there's, like, the whole machismo aspect to it. So if a guy is not really, like, a man's man, right, they use, like, homophobic language. And it really bothers me. And there's times where I just, like, I can't say anything, right? Like, I'm in a family function, and the dad says, like, you know, like, a slur in Spanish for, you know, like, a gay person. I'm just kind of, like, sitting there. I'm like, oh, you do know I'm gay, right? So I think those are more instances. I haven't really experienced, like, really overt. Within my family, actually, I have. My parents are really homophobic. And I grew up in a Christian church, right? So not, like, Catholic. It's, like, a Pentecostal Christian. So I would go to church, like, 3-4 times a week. And growing up, I always had that really, really homophobic attitude. So it was really difficult for me to, like, come out. And even now, you know, like, last time I went home, my dad basically told me that he was ashamed of me, right? So it's just, like, it's really harsh languages that we hear, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo that. I mean, I think the other thing that happens, I think whenever you're in one community and you try to bring up another identity, I think there's always a potential for tension. And so I think within the GLBT community, I think when, you know, you try to bring up race or when I try to bring up race, sometimes what I get from people is, oh, there's no, we don't really need to talk about that because we are also an underrepresented group or an oppressed group. And so, you know, I understand what you're going through because I too am gay, lesbian, bisexual, whatever. And so, of course, if you knew me, you know that doesn't really work very well. So, you know, you have these conversations where there's so much avoidance, I think, happening that it becomes really frustrating to kind of talk about who you are and where you're coming from. I agree with Veronica, it's the same outside of the GLBT community. I don't really have that same dynamic with my family, but, you know, you do have family members who say something that's really off color. I mean, I had a relative, we're talking about pop culture or something, and Jada Pinkett Smith, and, you know, well, and someone says, she's got to be a lesbian. Look at her arms. She has really dykey arms. I mean, what? I mean, you know, so you just, these little things that just find their way into the language sometimes where part of you just want to laugh. Like, really? I mean, really? This is what you're coming up with? But also, it makes you very aware of, like, what people think about sometimes GLBT folks and, you know, what might they think about you, too. So it's really, again, nothing, I think, overt. But just stuff that's, like, I like to think of as just being in the water.
And, like, another thing that's not necessarily, well, it kind of is discrimination. The focus on, like, gay marriage, right? Oh, yeah. There's just, like, within the LGBTQ community, gay marriage is such a huge issue, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, like, you know, like, we want to have a right to get married. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I want to get married, too. But there's a lot more pressing issues mm-hmm. within the community that are ignored. And so, like, mainstream GLBTQ community is always like, yeah, we want to get married. We want to have our civil rights as well. But you know that there's trans women of color that get beat up and killed and like, just mutilated. And no one ever says anything about it, right? So, like, within the LGBT community, there's underrepresented groups that, you know, like, are never spoken about. Mm-hmm. And their issues are never addressed. Unless it's within their own group, right? And mm-hmm. it's another thing we're talking about, like, you know, like, finding those spaces are the only times where we can actually talk about our real issues that are really affecting us. Mm-hmm. Because right now, like, gay marriage isn't in my mind. I mean, it is because it's going to pass here in Minnesota, right? Like, the amendment, or hopefully it doesn't pass. But the amendment's on the ballot, right? But there's also, like, so many other things, right? There's, like, homeless youth, mm-hmm. alcohol and drug abuse, mm-hmm. You know, like, the racism against people of color, because there is a lot of racism. Maybe we don't experience it, but there is, right? So there's all these issues that are going on, yet the focus is on gay marriage, right? And that's like, that by ignoring it, it is it's a form of discrimination, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't really, I think that the gay marriage, same-sex marriage issue is important, but, you know, I agree with Veronica. 100% that's not the issue that I care most about, that other activists and that I know in the community that they're really working towards. There are lots more, I think, pressing issues about basic needs that people need to survive, and gay marriage isn't really one of those. But I think that really goes back to who gets to set the agenda and what groups are left out of setting that agenda. So I think that's one really systemic way that prejudice or discrimination and racism, I think it's a form of systemic racism, really manifest in the GLBT community. So,
how do you confront the challenges you face as a queer woman of color?
I just do it head on.
Yeah.
I really try to find my own spaces and really assert myself, because there was times where I was just like, I can't say anything. I can't mention my race right now. I can't mention my queerness right now. But I think as I've learned more and as I've, gone through this process of coming out to myself and being comfortable with myself, I've really begun to assert myself more and be like, hey, that's not cool what you're saying. And I've also tried to really talk to people about how they feel about issues. And it's been really difficult, talking to other people of color and being like, hey, what's your issue with, same-sex couples or whatever? And I've been through some really tough conversations where people are just, spewing out homophobic stuff. And I'm just, trying to see their point of view. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's another thing, not getting angry every single time I hear a homophobic comment. I've gotten a lot better with that. But I also really turn to my community for support. Unfortunately, I don't really turn to the LGBTQ community for support, because what I've seen is that within the Chicano community, the Latino community, I get more support from the people there than I do from the LGBTQ community. And it just happens that because I relate more to them, because that's how I grew up, right? I didn't grow up being all queer and, being all surrounded by other LGBTQ people. So I'm really fortunate that I do have a really good support system and that they've helped me assert myself and be more confident in myself.
I think you keep having the conversation. So if that's happening in your communities, in your support system, but also in spaces where you have to challenge people, and I think you have to pick and choose when you do that. I mean, everyone has their own sense of, when is it appropriate for me to do this, to say something? Is this the right setting? But I think you need to do it. I think you need to make your voice heard. So that's one way for me, particularly as I've gotten older and have become way more assertive and more comfortable with myself, that I do that. And I think, the finding community thing is huge, and I would echo some of the things that Veronica's saying. I think in terms of my support system, I find more support with other Black people more so than I do in the GLBT community. I think in the rare instances where I meet other GLBT people of color, or more specifically African-American GLBT folks, that's awesome. But when that doesn't happen, it's usually people who look like me, regardless of their sexual orientation, who are my support system. And I guess I would say, always, I think there's a balance to it. I think sometimes if you do social justice work, and you're a part of these conversations where you do need to challenge people, I think at some point you do need to give yourself permission sometimes not to feel like you have to do it all. And I feel like that about a lot of things, but I think that way lies burnout. So, I always like to say that sometimes, confront. I mean, I have what I call radical Black feminist rage moments all the time. But, sometimes I have to I can't with this today before I throw something at someone's head. So, I think you have to give yourself that permission to not always feel like you have to be on all the time and educate other people. So, yeah, that's how I would say I confront some of the challenges.
What final messages would you like to convey to our audience?
My words of wisdom. I would say that, like, really keep in mind your privilege, right? Like, I feel like most of us have identities of, you know, like, whether you're a woman, a person of color, you know, you're LGBTQ, disabled, lower class, working class, whatever it is, right? We all have, most of us have an identity that, you know, like, we feel like we're oppressed, and we are, you know? But then I feel like we also should think, be able to think about our own privileges of how we add on to the oppression of other people. Because that's kind of what we were talking about, right? Like, not being able to find the communities because we do feel that, like, not, like, that hostility, that, you know, like, being invisible, not being welcome, and that's being part of privilege, right? Like, you know, if you're able to say whatever it is you have on your mind in your classroom, right, and you just, like, you can give your opinion without, you know, like, thinking that there's going to be a backlash, you know, like, not a lot of people have that, especially on this campus, right? Like, people of color are only, like, 10% on this campus. So there's always, you know, people in within the classes, and I don't know the percentage of LGBTQ people, because I don't know. Statistically, we're also 10% of the campus, right? So then there's, like, other people that that are not completely comfortable being in spaces surrounded where there's, like, you know, where their own identity is kind of, like, sticking out like a sore thumb. So I would really encourage you all to be mindful of your privilege. And, you know, like, when it comes to talking to people and not assuming, you know, like, where they're coming from. Because even, you know, like, as a queer woman of color, that's not all who I am, right? Like, that's not all of my identity. You know, there's a lot of different things that I identify as. And Say is here.
Hi, Say.
Hi, Say.
That's it. Those are my words of wisdom.
I swear Veronica's in my brain and she kind of took a lot of what I was going to say, particularly the privilege piece. No, it's good. Yeah, I know. I should have called her before and said, look, I'm going to talk about privilege. You don't talk about it too. No, I mean, I think the recognizing privilege piece is great. I mean, I think something else that doesn't really go with any of this, but I've been thinking about it anyway, is how to create community within the GLBT community, TQ community, and how do you work across sort of differences in the way that people identify themselves? So, you know, some people are, you know, I identify as queer. Some people hate the word queer. I mean, my staff has this conversation all the time. But so are there any sort of commonalities that you can find with, you know, if you don't like the word queer, but someone else uses the word queer, someone else is identifying as butch, someone else is identifying as trans, you know, how do you respect what, you know, people's right to, I think, name and identify themselves and still build community in those spaces? I think it's a really difficult thing to do, and it's something that is a frequent conversation that I have. So I guess in lieu of repeating what was already said about, you know, recognizing your own privilege, I would just say that, because I do think it's something worth thinking about. So,
and everyone, this is Say Yang, and Say is an intercollege program major at the University of Minnesota, focusing on social justice, graphic design, and youth studies. Let's give a welcome to Say.
Thank you.
And then Say, you can choose. You can choose to answer, address any of the questions if you want to say the question first, or talk about anything really.
Okay, talk about anything. Can you guys hear me? All right, I apologize for being late. I think I want to talk about the biggest challenge I face as being a queer woman of color, and I don't know, maybe both of you have already addressed it. I think part of it is finding community where you feel welcome in both communities, right? Mm-hmm. I can go into an Asian community and feel welcome there, but then kind of like leave behind my, you know, queer identity and vice versa, right? And so that's my biggest challenge. Did you guys say that already?
Yeah, no, but okay. It's good.
No, but it's good, you know, like, it's,
yeah. And sense. We're all saying it. I mean, it's, yeah.
Cool. Well, are there any other questions I should address?
We've got 9 minutes before we start question and answer, so you can talk about either of the pieces.
Have you or do you experience prejudice or discrimination within and outside the GLBT community? Can you give a story or an example? I want to talk about my work that I do. In I'm an intern at the GLBT Programs Office, and one time where I felt most, I don't know if it's discriminated or just really offended by what was said, but I organized something called Tsuki Showcase, and it in the past was for Hmong queer individuals who wanted to come and show their talents. But this year we're gonna open it up to the API community, and in part of our strategic planning process in our meeting, somebody had mentioned they felt like that wasn't necessary and didn't match our office's mission. And for me, I felt like personally attacked because, you know, that was what I was planning. And then they insisted on having a white privilege workshop instead. And for me, I just felt like, wow, like you just, you know, like knowing that color people are marginalized and like, instead you want to take that away and like do a white privilege workshop where not a lot of white people are into that, right? And so for me, that was my recent like encounter where I was really mad. I was like, I can't believe it. But I can't really think of like other circumstances that I've felt discriminated otherwise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then how do I confront challenges? I just talk a lot, honestly. You know, if somebody does something I'm not happy about, I'll say something, I'll organize something. Yeah, that's what I would do usually.
I think that's like how you were saying your story that reminded me too, like when I started QPOC, a person from the LGBTQ community came up to me and was like, why do you find it necessary to create your own, have your own space, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're all supposed to be in it together. You know, you're kind of creating division. And I was just kind of like taken aback, and I was like, well, you know, like I don't appreciate walking into a room, because here we have LGBT Alliance Thursdays at 7, in case y'all are interested. Allies are welcome. But when I first started coming to St. Cloud State, I would be like one of two people of color, right? And at first I was fine with it, but then after a while I was like, you know, like I said, I want to see more people of color. And so validating our spaces is an issue, I guess. You know, like we have to validate why we want to have our own space, instead of people, you know, like trying to understand that, you know, like we don't feel completely comfortable being surrounded by, you know, like other white students. And I hope none of you think I like have something against white people. Like I don't, you know, like I love all people, but you know, it's kind of hard not to notice my ethnic and racial differences, you know, when they're kind of like really obvious to other people, mm-hmm. right? Like people are always like, oh, where are you from? You know, like pointing out my accent or like pointing out things that are different from them. So nothing against white people. Whatever, I'm just saying it's how it is.
We have a similar queer people of color group at the U of M called Tongues Untied. And we had a similar discussion just recently about, do we want to open that space up to our allies and, you know, our, to come in, and how that would affect our group dynamics, and like if it would make people uncomfortable talking about their personal life. And somebody was, you know, was really mad about it because they were all for equality and wanted everybody to, you know, be able to come into this space. And others were like, no, you know, I want this to be a space where we, you know, where it's people of color and we have the same experiences and understanding. We don't have to re-educate somebody that, you know, is unaware of our experiences every time they come in. And so, you know, in the end, he just, you know, the one that advocated for equality just didn't come back. But I think something that we're trying to point out to him was that, you know, there are a lot of spaces out there where everybody can go to, and we want it to be more of a close-knit group where we can really talk about experiences and not spend a lot of time educating them about, you know, what it means to be queer and colored. And so we also have the same issue as well.
Well, I think it's interesting that when people say, you know, why do you feel the need for your own space, and aren't we all in this together, and let's join hands and all that. you know, and I do think that there's times where, like Saya is saying, that, you know, it's important to have people come together and, you know, have these conversations. But I think that when people say that, they don't realize that that's a sort of erasure of someone else's other identities. So, I mean, like, why can't we have community where differences are recognized and not sort of, like, glossed over? Sure, we're all in it together, but we all have very different experiences within that all together piece. And so, you know, I think it's a necessary conversation to have whenever you're trying to sort of do some of this work, and people are like, we should all just be in a big glob together. And you're like, well, sometimes, but sometimes people, communities need spaces of their own, like both Veronica and Say have been saying. So,
yeah. All right. Question and answers, or yes, question and answer period. Yes.
We have what is called like the alphabet soup
within
the community, because there's just a lot of different letters that represent people. There's just like LGBTQI, A, and QQ. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just different letters, right? I don't know if you could want to.
Well, I mean, well, okay. Your question was, what's the difference between LGBT, LGBTQ, and then queer, and then the alphabet soup of LGBTQ, I, QQ, 2S, you know, which, you know, I think Veronica's right. Some people just have different ways of referring to themselves, and I think, you know, the alphabet soup keeps getting bigger because people have and should have different ways that they want to identify themselves. I think queer, at least when we have conversations in our office, it's really interesting, is sometimes a generational conversation. It's not always, I think, but in our office it is. We have some older folks in our office who really feel like they grew up in a time where the word queer has a really negative sort of derogatory spin to it, and they really just don't like it, and they don't really feel like it's appropriate to just use it as sort of an umbrella term to describe all GOBT folks. And so then some people don't care, and then me personally, I don't care if other people do, and some people in my office really feel like no one should use the word, and I don't feel that way. I just feel like for me it doesn't resonate. So I think there's a lot of personal agency and what people prefer. I think there's regional pieces too. I mean, I never grew up, when I came out, no one was using queer. So for me, it's a little bit odd to ever think of myself that way. I mean, when I came out, when I was 15, it was, I don't even know if we really, lesbian wasn't, you were just gay. I mean, you know, so I don't really have an issue referring to myself as gay or lesbian, but queer would be really odd for me. So I don't know if it's an age thing, a region thing, and just the way the language is evolving thing. I think it's all of the above, and I don't know if anybody else wants to jump in and take that.
I think for me, it's, from my understanding of what queer is, it's kind of a reclaiming of a negative word. However, I think that, you know, because of what it used to be, you mm-hmm. know, really derogatory, it's very hard to use it openly mm. without, you know, other people being kind of offended. And so I think people are intentional and careful when they add the Q at the end.
Yep. Sorry. Okay. Let's go. For me, it was a process identifying as queer. Like, when I first came out, I identified as bisexual and then lesbian/gay. And then I came across the term queer within, you know, like reading about Chicana feminist and, you know, like a lot of women that I admire. And so for me, it became more of a political term because, you know, like the actual meaning of queer is like different, you know, like you look it up in the dictionary before it was derogatory, derogatory term. It meant different. And so that's kind of how I identify, because, you know, like a lot of I don't know, Brandon gives classes on this or workshops on this, you know, like sexuality is, it's just more of a spectrum, right? You know, like you have a straight and you have, you know, homosexual. And so it's kind of like, for me, I don't really feel like I fit into these boxes that are like lesbian, gay, bisexual. For me, it's just like, I really do see it as boxes, right? That if I identify as a lesbian, then that means I am only attracted to women. When in reality, like, I'm not, right? Like, I'm mostly attracted to women, but then there is that, you know, like, there is some attraction to men. Maybe not like in a complete way, like I do with women, right? But I can appreciate a guy, you know, just be like, oh yeah, he's cute, right? And some people are like, some people identify as lesbians. They're like, no, I don't even look at guys, you know, it's like gross. But for me, it's just kind of like, I really do see it as more of a fluid term. So
it's a political and personal choice as to why I identify as queer, kind of like what she was saying. It's more personal most of the time.
Other questions? Yes.
So you've all talked a little bit about salient sort of identity, and Veronica, you talked a little bit also about privilege. Can you speak a little bit more about leveraging privilege and maybe the thought process that goes into being intentional about leveraging privilege and how you would advise people to leverage their privilege?
You always ask intense questions, Brandon.
okay, so I could probably have like a whole long workshop on privilege, but essentially it's just kind of, you know, like we have the whole, white, male, straight, and it used to be Protestant before, like, you know, like that's the dominant group, right? And leveraging your privilege, I think it's becoming like more conscious of what your actions are. And for that, I mean, what your actions do and like and what privilege you get from that. And from that, I would really encourage you all to like look up some stuff online, you know, like Google it, white privilege, whatever. And you can find a lot of useful information. And I think for me, like my process was just kind of like, okay, cool. Like I'm a queer woman of color, you know, like woman of color. And not straight, right? So I have these oppressive identities, but I'm also a U.S. citizen, right? There's people that are undocumented in the United States, right? I'm able-bodied, so like I don't have to worry about, you know, like getting around campus if I'm not able to walk. I live here in the United States. That's another privilege, right? You know, like being able to go to college. That's another privilege. So just kind of really counting the things that make you not better, but like put you in a position where you have better opportunities, right? So if you happen to be, for example, a white woman, right? Like, yeah, you're a woman and a lot of times you face sexism, but you're also white, so you don't have to worry about, you know, like being classified as, for example, like a welfare queen, right? Even if you get assistance from the government, they're not gonna paint you as like a welfare queen because you're white. So there's like all these things that you have to really think about, I guess. And that includes race, ableism, you know, like your documented status. There's just like a long list of things, right? And just keeping those in mind, you know, and like throughout your day, I think, and it's really hard. It's really hard keeping that in mind. Even like I forget sometimes too, because I'm always like, you know, like I'm so oppressed, and you know, like I always have to be struggling every day of my life. But then I have to remember that it's just like I can see, I can hear, I can walk, I can talk, I can be here in the United States without being like worried that immigration's gonna come and take me. You know, like I'm going to college. There's all these things, right? And just being conscious of those, I think it's like leveraging privilege. I don't know if I answered that question.
I think also using your privilege to create access for those that don't have that privilege is one of... Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't... I think using your privilege to create access for people who don't have that privilege, right? And for me, that's what I would say is leveraging as well.
No, I was going to say the piece about, you know, how do you use the privilege you have? I mean, I think awareness of privilege is obviously, I think, the first step and really difficult. But then, you know, how do you move to action from that awareness? And one of the ways you do that is, you know, creating access for people who may not have, may not have historically had access to some of the privileges that you have. So I swear both of these folks are in my brain today. So, yeah.
Didn't you know all queer women of color think alike?
Yeah. And we all look alike, you know.
Right, we all look alike.
Short hair, glasses.
Oh, that's true.
Yes, question?
I can't see that.
I was wondering where you are an assistant director and where you're interning, if there are resources that is geared towards people of color?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I work in a women's center. And so for me, I think when I was in college, I volunteered at my campus women's center and talked about some of the same things that, you know, we've talked about today of, wait, where are all the women of color? Like, why aren't these issues as important to, you know, like, what's going on? You know, what's this dynamic all about? So now that I work in a women's center, we really prioritize, and I say we as a whole staff, and then me particularly, I feel really strongly about women's centers not being seen as places for white women. I mean, I think sometimes we get this sort of question of, like, can I come in if I'm, you know, a man? Can I come in if I'm a person of color? Can I come in if I'm not, like, a lesbian with short hair who wants to kill people kind of thing? Which, yes, we still get these questions. So we've really tried to prioritize. I think that's the only way it can happen. I don't think you can just say, well, we really care about diversity. You know, that's not enough. So, you know, we've really done a lot around, you know, talking with groups of women of color and saying, okay, what is important to you? We had a Women of Color Student Summit in November, and Say was a panelist and you went. And that really grew out of some focus groups that we had with women students of color, undergraduate and graduate women on campus, saying, what do you care about? And so we had an idea in our heads of, we're going to make this whole thing about X, Y, Z. And they're like, no, we don't care about leadership. We want to talk about how isolated we feel and, you know, how do we change our communities? You know, how do we have dialogue with each other? So that really shifted for us. So I think you have to be really intentional about those conversations, and really committed to implementing some of the things that you hear, even if it's not what you think should be happening or not the idea that you had in mind. So out of some of these assessment things we've done, we have the summit. We just created a mentoring program for women of color, so staff, faculty, and students. We do women faculty of color luncheons. I mean, so we have quite a few things that are women of color focused, just because we know, and if we want to be seen differently, we have to do differently. So.
All right, we're officially out of time, but let's thank our panelists.